my name is Monty Roland, and I'm with Monty Design in Morrisville, North Carolina. We're a product development firm with core competencies in mechanical engineering and industrial design and prototyping. We build products by listening to customers, by working from information they provided, by doing market research. There's a process that we use to build those products. And what I'd like to do is kind of talk through that with you today. That process has a lot of steps. And one of the steps is interviews. It's amazing what information you can get from the internet. But it's also a great source of information if you go straight to the people. And sometimes you can do an interview via electronic means, like an email or some sort of messaging on a forum or text messaging. But one of the most efficient ways to really dig in is to do live face-to-face interviews. And what I want to do is to talk about that. When you think about interviews, you want to immediately, or most folks, it's very tempting to immediately gravitate to the people using the product. Unfortunately, though, there's a broader spectrum of people that need to be interviewed. So that first thought to go straight to the user is good, but not complete. When you think about interviews, you really want to interview everybody in the life cycle of the product, because a product is kind of like a chain of events. If there's anywhere in that life cycle that falls apart on you, the product may fail in the marketplace, or it may never get to the marketplace. So interviewing end users is a small portion of the total number of interviews you need to do. You need to, in my opinion at least, where the place to start is start at the beginning of the chain. And this is especially true if you have maybe a product that's a little more mature, or you're designing a similar product, or there's something out there that's just even remotely comparable. So the beginning of that chain can very well be the manufacturer. And this could be the marketing folks at your client. This could be the contract manufacturers that make similar products. This could be your own manufacturing facility. So one of the first things to do is to interview those folks and ask questions about what kind of things they see with similar products or existing products. You know, what are gotchas? What are things that could be improved? What are things that can make life easier? And generally, when you address those questions, you end up making the product more profitable. You may reduce the time to manufacture. You may reduce supplier issues. But those are things that all just take away from the bottom line. And before you walk into that interview, I think it's definitely important to have a plan and have a list of questions. That plan includes a list of standard questions. This is especially important if you have multiple people doing interviews, because you want to make sure that you've got well thought out questions that address the needs and really dig in. And some of those questions may not be relevant to the market segment you're interviewing, and that's okay. And maybe even you skip over those. But there's some pretty standard questions that apply to everybody, and you want to make sure you hit those, or at least relative to that product, they apply to everybody you're interviewing. And so we take that list of questions and our list of people we want to interview across the life cycle. And let's say the first part of the life cycle is manufacturing. Go ask those questions. Those standard questions give you data points that are consistent across your interviews. And the other thing they do is they lead to other discussions that may lead to nuggets of knowledge that you really want. And so once you have those nuggets of knowledge, then you can dig in and you may improve your product or make it more profitable or less of a pain. So the kind of the next step in the life cycle is we've got manufacturing, we've got marketing. You know, what are the troubles that the marketing folks have with other products that are similar or within your client's company? You know, what are some industry issues that they face from a marketing standpoint? And then next set of people we want to talk to is distribution. And distribution being the logistics side of it, are there things that you need to consider that could make or break the product? So for example, how many will fit on a pallet? A lot of times as we're designing away, designing packaging and so forth, it's real easy to try to do the coolest thing or the neatest thing or make some sort of splash or reduce materials and not put a strong enough consideration into how it's going to be shipped. You know, is this a product that's always going to go UPS ground, or is this a product that's going to go LTL or some other shipment method? And those shipment methods need to be compatible with your product. So for example, if I have a product where I can fit 96 on a pallet, then that means the cost of that pallet, let's say it's $300 to ship it, is divided by 96. So I've added, you know, roughly $3 per product just to ship it. Well, if I can only fit 84, then all of a sudden I've added $4 and something per product to ship it, and that may be something that causes a problem. So it's always important to consider that and ask the shippers on the logistics side of it all, you know, what kind of problems do they have? Do they have problems with loading? Do they have problems with the quantity shipped? You know, how does that affect the pricing structure? And then also too, think about distribution. We've got distributors who are the link between your manufacturing facility and the resellers. Some products don't have distributors. A lot do. And that distributor can be very overlooked. So we want to make sure that we design products that fit with what the distributor needs to be efficient. And so interviewing distributors and asking them those questions and, you know, making sure that we're not creating a product that gives them heartburn somehow. Because if the distributor has challenges with the product, they may decide not to pick it up. And then, of course, the resellers next. You know, what does the reseller really want from this product? You know, what are things that other products give them headaches over? So as we're marching through, we're looking for what I'm going to call low-hanging fruit. What are simple changes we could make that makes it easier for the folks in this life cycle or food chain to move the product to the next stage? Because anywhere, if you have a hiccup, it can cost you money, time, or maybe even someone doesn't pick up your product because of the pain and suffering, because it wasn't well designed to pass through each of these organizations. And then we've got the resellers. You know, what are their hot buttons? What are things that they need to stay profitable? How does your product, how is it merchandised? You know, what are the point of purchase? Does it need RFID tags? Does it need barcodes, UPC codes? What are things that are important to the resellers? Because they've got a totally different perspective than everybody else we've talked about so far. So now we've been through all these groups and we're getting down to our end users. Now with our end users, there's a lot of tools. We've previous podcast talked about personalities and personas, and there's a lot of tools to help plan the product for the end user. But for these other steps, the interviews are a pretty good way to do that. So now we're to the end user, but can't be too quick because there's a product specifier and there's a product purchaser. So, and you go, well, I have a consumer product. There's not a specifier. And I'm like, yes, there is. Because the specifier may be the person who says, I want a new iPod, Mom. So he's kind of specifying what he wants. I want the 12 billion gig version. And then the purchaser, mom or dad, goes and says, does a little research of their own, and they may say, no, 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 you got to live with the 16 gig version because the other one's too expensive. So all of a sudden, we've had an interplay where there's opportunities to have your product stand out, because in this case, it's specifier friendly, or it makes sense to the person who's a specifier. And then maybe because it's buyer friendly, you know, what makes it buyer friendly? And buyer friendly may mean have nothing to do with the product itself, but maybe that there's information about the product available that helps the buyer confirm that they're making the right decision, reviews and so forth. So you want to make sure that you help encourage these things by how you design your product. It may even be that the neighbor is the person who makes a suggestion to the mom or dad. So in this case, what made the product friendly to the neighbor that would make them want to recommend it? You know, is that how it works so well from a parent's standpoint, maybe in this case? So then we get to the end user. And then, of course, the question after that is, what about after the end user's done with it? What's the lifetime of the product? And then what do you do with it afterwards? So I think it's important to work through all these. Normally, that number I've always been taught is when you do 21 interviews, you're starting to get a statistically significant amount of information. But your interviewing technique is important. You may have people you interview who really don't provide a lot of information. You may have people that start giving you the same information. Once you start hearing the same thing, then you may want to concentrate your interviews in other areas, because you've kind of confirmed that, we're starting to know. We've had 20 people tell us A. Well, let's keep asking A, but let's start asking maybe B or C and try to explore a little deeper in next interviews, or even go back. So those interviews can confirm the information. Those interviews can provide you with new information that you have to go explore. And then occasionally you just get a piece of low-hanging fruit, like, gee, if this was a quarter inch smaller, I could fit 156 on a pallet instead of 96 on a pallet. You would save the reseller and the distributor, I don't know, $100 per 100 products, and that would kick them to the point where they would definitely want to have your product rather than the other people who only get 56 on the pallet. So understanding the topology and what people's needs are and pain points are go way beyond the look or the feel of the product, but go also into things that may feel as intangible to the user, but may be amazingly important to other people in the food chain. And so I encourage you to go dig those out, ask those questions, go up and down that food chain, find in everybody that touches the product, or at least potentially would touch product, and I shouldn't say everybody, representative sample of folks that would know what some of the pain is. And then when you design your product, you can design a product that's meant to be successful not only on the trade show floor or not only in the user's hands, but also successful through the whole process of manufacturing, distribution, sales, marketing, and create a better product that is more profitable. That's kind of my thought on this subject. If you have a question or questions, don't hesitate to give me a call, 919-481-1845, or shoot me an email, Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, at monty.com. We're located in Morrisville, North Carolina, just south of the RDU Airport. If we can put our services to use and improve your products or drive your products or just create new products for you, give me a call. Come by for a tour, and let's build some winning products and build some profitable products. Have a great day. Monty Rowland, signing out.